I think it's a good strategy. You want to go for kind of the non-consensus play. You can't win if you're doing what everyone else is doing. You have to force a choice. You can't play the comparison game. And it's true for startups. It's true for governments and tourism as well.
Welcome to Brave. Learn from Southeast Asia's best tech leaders. Build the future. Learn from our past. And stay human in between. No BS on success. I'm Jeremy Au, venture capitalist, Sierra founder, Harvard MBA, science fiction nerd, and dad of two daughters. Every week, we debate startup news, interview changemakers, answer listener questions, and share personal insights. Join our movement of over 40,000 members and get transcripts, resources, and community at www.bravesea.com. Stay well and stay brave. Grain is an online restaurant that serves healthy yet tasty meals on demand and catering. They are backed by investors including the Lo & Behold Group, TE Tia, Open Space, and Cento Ventures. Their meals are thoughtfully created by chefs with wholesome ingredients. For the month of April, Grain has teamed up with HGH Maimuna to bring you a quirky yet delightful experience for the first ever Michelin-inspired catering in Singapore. Learn more at www.grain.com.sg. If you ever need to feed your teams or family, go check out Grain. Hey, Wing, excited to have you.
Yeah. Hey, Jeremy. Thanks for having me back on. Excited to continue our chat from last time.
Yeah. And I think last time around that we discussed, we really talked about Thailand and, you know, kind of the startup ecosystem, about why you're optimistic that despite the past, I think, 10 years of falling behind the peers, I think you think that now is an interesting time to see. And it's been interesting because over the past couple of months, we've definitely seen a lot of news come out of Thailand. So we wanted to kind of discuss a bit about it and hear your point of view, but also how you think it impacts the tech sector as well. For you, when you think about the past few months, what do you think has been the biggest moves you think has happened?
Yeah, so I guess from my perspective, the biggest changes we're seeing in Thailand, it's exciting to talk about, is the new administration. We have a new prime minister, and some of the initiatives that he's been talking about, everything involving tourism, trying to stimulate the economy through consumption, digital wallet initiatives. And so I think that's kind of the main storyline that's been hitting Thailand over the last couple of months, maybe less so on the tech side, more so on the macro side, which hopefully if he does a good job, he's going to stimulate more of the tech moving forward. I guess to start, an interesting thing to maybe talk about is just the GDP forecast of Thailand in general. I think relative to Indonesia and Vietnam, we don't look like a very high growth or strong growth economy. So I think the forecasted GDP increase for Thailand is around 2.5 to 3%. I think it was 3%. And then they revised it down to about 2.5% this year. When you compare it to Indonesia, I believe the latest number is around 4%. Vietnam, that's 6.5%. I think that's one of the fastest growing in the region. And Singapore, which we all looked at as a more developed market, is around, I think, is less than 2% or something along those lines. So Thailand as a starting point is closer or looks more like the more developed markets in Southeast Asia as up to the hot markets, Indonesia. So yeah, I thought that was interesting to point out, and maybe a lot of people don't realize about this specific market.
Yeah. And it's interesting because Thailand and Malaysia are both similar, right? So around the order 5,000 to 8,000 GDP. I think it's kind of surprising in some ways that Thailand's GDP per capita growth or GDP growth, the rate seems to be lower, seems to be, they call it the middle income trap. I think it's been interesting because it feels like this new administration that you just mentioned historically has been much more pro-business as a party. And so it's interesting to see how the new prime minister, Srettha Thavisin, is thinking or at least portraying the agenda for the government.
Yeah, I guess from my perspective, what I see him consistently push, there's a couple of things. Actually, one thing which has not been great with the new administration that's causing some investors and businesses to lose confidence is that there's been some pretty open conflict between the prime minister and the Bank of Thailand. This is specifically in related to interest rates. So I think right now interest rates in Thailand is about 2.5%, not terribly high, but the prime minister has come out publicly and said that Thailand's economy is in a crisis. And this is basically to pressure the Bank of Thailand to decrease the interest rate further. I think for him, he's very pro cutting interest rate to stimulate consumption in the economy. But there's pressure against this from the Bank of Thailand saying that, hey, Thai economy is at an okay level. We're expected to grow. We don't need to cut interest rates at this point. So this public conflict hasn't been great for just confidence in general of the Bank of Thailand and the Prime Minister's office working together. So this is one thing to keep an eye out on as well.
I mean, it's pretty common for governments and legislations. For example, you know, President Trump was always pressuring the Fed consistently for a lower interest rate, no matter what. And I think the basic macroeconomic theory, like you said, is if a lower interest rate, cost of capital lower, then investors can deploy more, people can borrow more. When people can borrow more, they can spend more, the whole economy goes up. It's a function of increased consumption and increased investment by businesses. But of course, historically, I think the US has benefited the most from it because it's a global reserve currency. It gets to set the interest rates. People don't really have an alternative to holding the US debt and US capital. I mean, Thailand also went through the Asian financial crisis, right? So I know a lot of the central banks in Southeast Asia have always been kind of like edgy around interest rates.
Yeah, more cautious, I think. So,
you know,
yeah.
What do you think the Bank of Thailand is thinking from their perspective? How are they thinking about it?
I think from their end, they're probably seeing moderate GDP growth, 2.5%. Yeah. It's growing. We don't have very high inflation. And I think they want to, you know, the more you cut interest rates, the less you have that as a lever in times of need, where maybe you actually, the economy is doing poorly, you're starting to see some decline or even lower growth. It's a tool that you have, but once you go one way, it's hard to kind of flip-flop back and forth between cutting, increasing. So I think from their perspective, they're trying to balance it out a bit more. And then I think from the Prime Minister's perspective, his main agenda, his main goal is probably trying to stimulate the economy so that his administration can look back and say, hey, we had more growth when we were in power. We were able to increase consumer confidence, business confidence, investments into the country. And I think this ties nicely into the earlier question you're asking, which is, what are some of the main initiatives we're seeing being pushed from the new administration? There are a couple of big ones come to mind. I think the big overall one is, like, it's clear that he wants to increase GDP. I think the path he's taking to that is big focus on tourism as a primary one, right? Which is a little different than some of the other markets here. It's very heavily reliant on tourism for GDP. So as a percent of GDP, I think it's around 20%, which is pretty high. So 20% of the country's GDP is from tourism. And I saw some forecasts that by 2030, that this tourism sector is expected to account for 30% of Thailand's GDP. So I think there's a lot of expectation that, you know, the government administration is going to lean further into tourism and really push this. And I think we're seeing some of that, right? I think one really clear one is Thailand stopped requiring visa for tourists from specific countries to enter. So I believe China and India, you don't need to make a visa beforehand anymore. You're able to come and enter. And this is just going to increase visitors. So it's really interesting to see them kind of lean into this identity of tourism being one of the primary growers of GDP. And then, you know, there's a lot of other stuff tangentially related to tourism with the marijuana stuff we were talking about earlier. I think that's prompted a lot of tourists to come in as well. So yeah, I think it's interesting that they're leaning in very hard to this.
So let's talk about tourism a little bit before we double click in, of course, into the cannabis side, which is, I think, a lot of folks in my orbit have been also talking about. But on the tourism side, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it caused this whole furor where I think the Prime Minister very much was saying that Singapore was very smart for landing the Taylor Swift exclusivity agreement. And obviously it caused this whole shit show on the Singapore side, because he diplomatically had to go and argue with every single Southeast Asian country about this exclusivity agreement. And then, of course, I mean, obviously, in the context of the Thai Prime Minister's speech, it wasn't necessarily about Singapore, right? It was about how Thailand is up its game tourism-wise to draw these concerts in. But I just thought it was just a funny piece where it's just like, we had to get the Singapore multiple ministers to speak about it. We had to get a prime minister to speak about it. I don't know. It was like a mild diplomatic incident where everybody in, you know, Malaysia, Indonesia, and the Philippines had to talk about their, you know, Swift the voter electorate frustration about having to fly to Singapore.
How was that for Singapore, actually? Do you feel like overall that was like a big success for the country, boosted a lot of things? I thought it was very smart of them to do that, you know, offer the incentives for Taylor Swift to exclusively host, I think it was like 6-7 shows.
Yeah, I mean, I think 3 major factors. One is that there are very few people like Taylor Swift that can actually pull people from the region. I mean, I listened to a concert from Jack Johnson. I was pretty much nobody flew in for this guy because nobody knows who this guy is, right? But I love the musician. Two is, I think it's, like you said, the impact turned out to be roughly around $400 to $500 million of top lines, you know, kind of like injection into the economy in terms of like tourism receipt. Kind of like you don't take into account the multiplier effect, you know, you take into account the fact that the government has effectively, like, you know, 8% tax, right, on consumption. So you pretty much, the government straight away made effectively, like, I would say about 30 to 40 mil just on taxes. And then the exclusivity agreement was about $3 to $5 million, right? So then the government already profited, I guess, technically from a tax receipt basis. Obviously, I think it was a lot of actually spillover effects into like stimulation of the economy. I think people got excited. But also, I think interestingly, I think the domestic voting electorate was quite happy about it. And of course, the third factor I think is underappreciated was that Singapore government actually did nationalize some of the sporting and event area. It used to be run by a public-private conglomerate, I would say a partnership, which was very focused on sports. But now it's more directly managed by the government. So it's actually an interesting piece where the government is actually much more involved in sourcing organizers. So I always joke, like, now you're like a civil servant, but you're like opening up this like itinerary and you're like, okay, you know, which K-pop star should we bring in this month? Because there's an interesting dynamic where the area where the Taylor Swift concert costs about $1 million to convert it between entertainment to sports. So it's actually an interesting dynamic where you need to like designate event months in Singapore. And then after that, you put all your concerts and then you convert it to a sports format, like F1 or something like that. So it's actually an interesting, I don't know what's the word, national policy or domestic tourism. So I think it's interesting to see. I think everybody in Southeast Asia is really competing for that tourism dollar as a result. It's not an easy industry either. I think Vietnam has not had that rebound in tourism from China that they were hoping for. So there's been an interesting dynamic for this tourism piece. Are you optimistic or pessimistic about the Thai side tourism wise?
And I guess my opinion with tourism as a general sector is, on the one hand, it makes sense because we have, speaking specifically about Thailand and maybe some of these other countries, well, there's a lot of natural resources in terms of like just beauty, nature, parks, beaches that naturally will draw tourism. But these resources are not necessarily sustainable in the very, very long run. In the sense that the more people come in to enjoy these resources, tourism, it does degrade over time. Just look at if it's too crowded or just the quality of the beaches, the quality of the ocean over time as more people come. And it's not like Hawaii where we're practicing very sustainable tourism where there are very strict rules and regulations around that either. I think there's been some changes in that direction, but it hasn't fully gone there yet. So because I look at this resource as not necessarily long-term sustainable, I've always looked at tourism as kind of like an intermediate thing where it's like, this is going to be great for the economy. It's going to stimulate the economy to a certain point. But then what's next? What's the long-term play? Well, what's like the long-term game that you want to play here? And I guess to me, that's not very clear. So yeah, I guess the push into tourism from Thailand, Singapore, Vietnam is the low-hanging fruit in a way, right? It's the thing that is not going to take decades for you to see the results. You're going to see this very clearly in the next quarter just by the number of tourists coming in or whatever that metric you're tracking is. But yeah, I'm not sure what the implications are for tech, for investments, for manufacturing, or for kind of more long-term industries where we spend our time.
And I think, like you said, I think the administration currently has right, because they're looking to build out that popularity and legitimacy from the population because of like the prior electoral process. And so I think one interesting part that I've noticed that, you know, they're trying to regulate cancer, right? It's an interesting piece. Because I think when it was deregulated 2022, I was like very shocked by the speed of it, but also the extent of that deregulation. And so now there's a lot of weed tourism that's obviously happened in Southeast Asia towards Thailand. But I'm just kind of curious, you know, it seems, and I always thought that it's like, once you kind of like let the genie out of the bottle, you can't really put it back in, right? Kind of dynamic. Especially when in 2022, they were giving out millions of cannabis plants to individual households as part of the deregulation. So I'm kind of curious, you know, what does the shape of that legislation that they're proposing is coming from your perspective?
Yeah, so with the initial decision to decriminalize marijuana was very interesting, right? It's the first country in Asia, I believe, to do so. And now there's been a bit of a consumer shift or backlash to that. And so I believe the current plan is that they're trying to ban the recreational use of marijuana by the end of 2024, so by the end of this year. So prohibit recreational marijuana use, but they'll still allow medical purposes for marijuana. I am very skeptical that this happens, just because, like you said, right, it's very difficult to put the genie back in the bottle. I don't know if you visited Thailand, Bangkok recently, but if you have, right, it's almost every single block you see a dispensary. So right. Some marijuana dispensary. These are new buildings that were just constructed, really nice interiors, decorated. Right. They're everywhere. Because of that, I think there's a lot of people that have, there's a lot of stakeholders at play here, right? Owners, right. employees, all the way through the supply chain from farming, growth to distribution, processing, marketing, whatever it is. There's a whole supply chain that's been put in effect here over the last couple of years. And this law, it hasn't been passed yet. This is what the, I believe the PM is pushing to do. And yeah, I'm quite skeptical that it's going to happen, especially, I guess, the two main reasons, this putting the genie back in the bottle, like you said, there's a lot of people, a lot of stakeholders who are very clearly benefiting from this all throughout the supply chain. And then two, with the push to tourism, I think that this actually is a big thing that's attracting tourists to enter the country and come to Thailand. So I think I'm quite skeptical that it's going to pass. I think it'll be interesting to see how it plays out over the next couple months.
Yeah, I mean, Thailand is really ahead of the curve in Southeast Asia, right? It's the only country in Asia, I would say, that actually has legalized weed. I'm talking about East Asia, maybe South Asia and Southeast Asia. So I think definitely hear people talking about it. The numbers here say that, you know, it's going to be worth a $1.2 billion industry. And I think it's quite believable, right? I'm kind of curious from your perspective is, obviously, when you say that you're pessimistic about it, do you think it's a ban on the recreational use? Are you saying that you don't think the ban on recreational use will happen? Or are you saying that you think that the medical usage of it will be relatively loose or kind of like not well regulated?
I don't think the recreational use ban will happen. That's my prediction, but I wouldn't be super surprised if it was kind of what you're saying as well, where, you know, it's for medical purposes, but it's not too strict around that. But I think my bias right now is I'm skeptical that even the recreational use ban will be implemented.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how that turns out.
Just because of what you said, right? It's a huge industry. It's benefiting tourists so much.
No, it's definitely interesting. I think that obviously there's a lot of interesting dynamic. I mean, you grow up in, you know, all these Hong Kong movies are talking about the Golden Triangle, right? You know, so, and now it's like, you know, big surprise for Malaysia, obviously on the border side, Singapore. I mean, it's illegal for every Singaporean citizen to take drugs anywhere in the world. And so there's all these stories about Singaporeans going to Thailand and then when they come back, they get randomly drug tested because, you know, and if they get caught having weed in their system, then that's a problem, right? So I think it's an interesting dynamic because it's legal now, fully legal and booming. And by such a stark contrast, I don't know. I feel like if I was like saying like the US legalization, it's always been like used for a long time and it's effectively decriminalized for a long time. And then yet, you know, I don't know, it's Europe as well. It always felt like it was more like a blend or like a very soft gradient of drug enforcement on the weed side. But it feels like Thailand is just really like sticking out like a sore thumb, kind of like very divergent from, you know, all the neighbors.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good strategy. You want to go for kind of the non-consensus play. You can't win if you're doing what everyone else is doing. You have to force a choice. You can't play the comparison game. And, you know, it's true for startups. It's true for governments and tourism as well, right? I think by doing this, they're forcing a choice. It's not a comparison anymore because it's so binary one way or the other. If Thailand pushes more in this direction, maybe not specifically decriminalizing more drugs, but just like doing things very differently from neighboring countries that are unexpected, I think that's how they win. I think that's how they beat the competition. That's what we advise our startups when we invest, right? Do something different, kind of play the other game. I think in this respect, that's what the government did here. So yeah, it will be interesting to see what else comes out of this.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting because for so many countries in Southeast Asia, you know, with what's happening in Thailand and obviously in America, the drug laws are kind of like a real divergence, right? So it'll be interesting to see maybe there's more convergence in the future as well. And, you know, speaking about other, you know, things that Thailand is doing differently, it seems like Thailand, you know, passed initial proposal on same-sex marriage as well. So I'm just kind of curious because that does feel so very different from Southeast Asia. I think the only country in Asia would be Taiwan that passed same-sex marriage. So I'm just kind of curious about what you think about the Thai parliament bill.
Yeah, I think that my latest understanding of where that bill is right now is, I believe it's they've drafted the initial bill. So there's a draft amendment that would change kind of like the civil code for the country. And I think you have to go through like second and third readings. So I think the timeline for passing is still a couple months away. This is something that they've been talking about for a while. I think it's been a couple years now that they've talked about this kind of legislation, but it does seem like there is momentum around this, picking up steam. It would be a big step. I think Taiwan is the only other Asian country that allows this. course. It's an interesting move again, right? I think it's unlikely that you're going to see countries like Indonesia, Malaysia pass such a bill, Singapore as well. So really, I think Thailand kind of positioning itself differently from neighboring countries. I think this is part of what the PM is. Well, one of the big initiatives he's pushing is this, I think he calls it the National Soft Power Strategy, which is to basically increase soft power of Thailand globally through food, opening Thai restaurants internationally across different countries, movies, kind of like what Korea has done really well, and sports, fashion, tourism. So basically just like increasing the awareness of the culture and the values of Thailand, which, you know, I mean, this is like what America does the best, right? Like their number one export has always been their culture, right? It's like we grow up watching their movies, their films, and wanting to aspire to be their heroes, right? And I think this is one push to PM's doing. So I think the legalization of gay marriage would fall within that. I think, you know, most people are probably for this globally, right? I think especially with like newer generations, I think most people see this as a net positive. And I think it's going to help a lot where like, hey, Thailand's the only country that where this is allowed. Maybe that stimulates more tourism. Maybe that shows you that Thailand's government's values are more closely aligned with yours. So yeah, I think it's a smart move if they're able to push this through. I think we'll see in a couple of months how far this gets.
I mean, yeah, this is interesting as well, right? Because similar to weed, but even more so, I think this idea is pretty popular in the Thai, you know, people, right? So pretty much overwhelming public support. So it's kind of like interesting to see the political system kind of catch up with the interest by the public, especially on the LGBT rights dynamic. Whereas I think, like you said, for the weed side, I think there's a popularity piece, but also a big pushback because of the lack of regulation around like recreational cannabis usage around schools and other public spaces as well. So yeah, this feels like an easier, I don't know, like I said, political win in that sense. And it feels like a little bit more straightforward as a proposal, right? But like you said, it's also very different. I mean, you're like literally there's still corporal punishment in Southeast Asia for being LGBTQ, right? So and I think for Singapore, like you said, I think it harmonized and removed legislation around the criminal penalties for LGBTQ. So it was like one of those laws that were not enforced, but it was on the book. So that was removed by the People's Action Party. It was also interesting because they then also chose to, I think as part of the electoral / political bargain, encode constitutional definition of marriage as, you know, between a man and a woman, right? So that was a big kind of like trade to kind of saying like we're protecting marriage in terms of the traditional definition. Obviously it's still changeable. I mean, the constitution, you know, is still changeable based on, you know, electoral percentage in the political parliament, right? So I think it's not like a hard, is this chose a hard code, a higher percentage requirement effectively for the future? But of course, I think Singapore is dealing with electorally, like, you know, it has a large Chinese, Malay, Indian population. And obviously we have the Christian and the Muslim faith dynamics around LGBTQ. Right? So I think electorally is quite dicey to do this in Singapore, for example. And I think pretty much a non-starter, I'll say definitely in Malaysia and Indonesia. But it's interesting to see this Thai side because, again, it's one of those interesting things where, I mean, I think a lot of Southeast Asian countries are really struggling where, like, if you're LGBTQ married from America or Canada, like, what do we do with you as a tourist or as a traveler or as a worker?
Yeah.
Can we even recognize it, you know, for property rights and driver licenses and emergency contacts? But, you know, like, other countries are really trying to solve this. And with Thailand doing it, I think it's going to become even more like desynchronized in that sense. Driver licenses and emergency contacts. But, you know, like, other countries are really trying to solve this. And with Thailand doing it, I think it's going to become even more like desynchronized.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I think that the legalization of gay marriage is a very clear and easy win for Thailand. It's going to basically allow them to stand out relative to the other countries here, support something that I think most people here, and I think, you know, a lot of people just regionally as well support. So yeah, it's less controversial than the weed ban, right? So we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, I think that makes sense.
Another piece of legislation that's come through that's been interesting is the push for casinos actually in Thailand. I thought that was a fascinating piece because that has also been something that's new, I think, in the with the current administration. So I'm just kind of curious about how you're thinking about gaming. I guess it's quite common to tourism, as you said, as a pillar of the current prime minister's agenda.
Yeah, I think so. That piece of legislation in particular, I think it would permit different forms of gaming and gambling. So I think it's like sports betting, overall gambling, like casinos, online gambling, and also more speculation on the stock exchange of Thailand. There were talks of building actual kind of complexes and buildings across different regions, right? So like one in central, north, northeast, south of Thailand. So it's kind of fair distribution. And I saw some of the predictions was like, it's expected to increase the tax revenue to like $3 billion per year, which is 100 billion baht per year, $3 billion. And that would be from a 30% tax on licensed premises. Again, I think it's very much similar to what we're talking about in terms of the tourist boost, just more push there. I think this, again, I think this is not super close to getting passed yet. I think it'll still be closer towards the end of the year to see how this initiative develops as well. But yeah, I think it's like an all-in push just to increase tourism, right? I think 35 million people predicted this year to come into Thailand, like tourists to come into Thailand. I think this would boost that further along with everything else we've been talking about. So I think, yeah, like with the prime minister, that's one big initiative, right? Just kind of increasing tourism. The second big one is this digital wallet initiative. I don't know how much you've spent time reading about this one, but this one's quite interesting. And there's been some recent controversy, but high level, the plan here was basically to distribute 10,000 Thai baht to the citizens, right? This was something that this party had promised during the election. They were like, hey, if we win, everyone's going to get 10,000 baht, one-time payment, 10,000 baht to about 50 million people. And I think there's specific criteria you have to qualify where like you can't make more than 70,000 Thai baht a month or have more than 500,000 in your savings account. So I think that leaves about 50 million or so people. So this was one of the big populist policies that they push in the election run, right? But the problem is, you know, we don't have the necessarily money to fund that in the government right now. So they'd have to take a loan of about 500 billion baht. And I think with the government's idea is that you're going to have to spend this within a certain amount of time in certain categories, right? So that's maybe like food, travel, just consumption in general. It's really just to boost consumption in the economy. The interesting part is how they're planning to distribute this 10,000 baht. So it hasn't happened yet. There's been a lot of talk about, hey, how are we going to distribute a 10,000 baht? And the prime minister has talked a lot about blockchain technology or involving blockchain somehow in this distribution.
So you already have a digital wallet. You don't need a blockchain digital wallet. I'm just throwing it out there.
Exactly. We have the digital wallet, right? So we have the Bao Tang app, which is from Krung Thai's bank. This was created during COVID. It was to stimulate tourism and all that. So this is what was in the news recently, where the prime minister was like, yeah, we're going to create a new blockchain app in order to airdrop 10,000 Thai baht to every citizen. I think he's an investor. He's a big investor in a company called X Spring Capital as well. So he was a businessman, right? He was at Sansui, which is this big property developer. They own 15% of this company, X Spring Capital, which issued his own token, SiriHub token. So I think there was some talk about using that company or something similar to airdrop the token or the 10,000 baht to the citizens. But then he's getting a lot of pushback because we already have this digital wallet blockchain. Is the blockchain going to work with 50 million people?
It's right. Is it the thought of 50 million people trying to run a blockchain process? You know, I'm just saying you better hope the app works and, you know, you're not gated in terms of transaction speed or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm very skeptical of the necessity of the use of blockchain and just kind of like the logistics operationally, how is this going to work? But I will say through some miracle and through just excellent operational planning, this works and Thailand becomes like the first country in Southeast Asia where everyone is suddenly on the blockchain. Could be something interesting too, but I'm skeptical at least.
No, I mean, it's fair, right? I think it'd be cool because suddenly you're exposing everybody and giving them some stake in the blockchain ecosystem. I guess, like you said, the tricky part, like you said, is like the rails between, you know, blockchain and being able to pay for food, you know, at the local convenience store is going to be that, many steps. And then we've seen a lot of like catastrophic failures in terms of like, you know, transactions that take forever to, you know, reconcile and so forth. It will be interesting to see how that happens.
Yep.
But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, all of this, you know, kind of like all paints a picture of a very pro-business piece, right? Even for the casino, the Philippines has a casino tax of 25%, about 30%. Singapore is around 17%. So, you know, like this is a huge push by the Thai government to, like you said, increase gaming, increase tourism, try to not kill the cannabis cow here a little bit, you know, same-sex marriage. There's a lot of change afoot. Any other, I think, key things that you think are happening as well from their perspective?
I think those were the big ones. I think with this new administration, those are the three big pushes, right? So like tourism, the soft power strategy,
right,
and then the stimulation in consumption. I think my big takeaway is that these all feel relatively short term in such that they're not necessarily long-term innovation that's going to continue stimulating the economy. So I think I think a lot of them are going to work. I think a lot of them is going to drive tourism. It's going to drive consumption. But then what's like kind of the more long-term play? Some of it's really smart. Thailand is kind of, I think, finding its identity more as like a really tourist-based economy and all the implications that come along with that, showing that we have Western values in a sense, attracting more tourists that way. But yeah, I think those were the main things that at least I've been keeping my eye on.
You know, actually, you're right to say that it does feel very different, right? Because if you look at Vietnam, you know, we're discussing Valerie Vu, but it feels like the Vietnamese government is very focused on foreign direct investment, right, from both the Chinese and Americans. So they're using the Chinese to build infrastructure. They're using the Americans to build semiconductor industry. They're trying to coast and surf the China plus one supply chain decoupling strategy. So it feels like they're very focused on manufacturing. As a result, they have terrible air quality right now, one of the worst in the world. So, but, you know, definitely not much tourism when your skies are, you know, with small. But it does feel very...
Just that point you reminded me, that's been a big issue in Thailand over the last couple months too. I think underreported as well. The air quality here has, Bangkok has been really horrible.
Oh.
So we use this PM measurement where basically if it's over a certain number, it's like just dangerous to go outside. And I think this is an underreported issue in terms of the long-term health effects people have been feeling. Through a big chunk of January and February, you basically couldn't go outdoors.
Oh, shit.
And the scary thing is like you could and you wouldn't know anything, but then you check the PM levels and it's like 150, 180, 200. Wow. Like it's that red sign of the guy wearing the mask saying like stay indoors is extremely dangerous. Yeah. And I think that's one thing that's underreported. We're like, I'm sure a lot of people out of necessity or out of just not knowing spent a lot of time outdoors during those couple months. And there's going to be very, very damaging long-term health effects that we don't know about yet.
Oh boy.
So that was a big thing.
Yeah, it's a big problem. I mean, I was in China back in 2008. And, you know, I was like young and fearless and I was out running and exercising in the smog. And then I came down with like the worst cough and fungal infection. It's just like sucking in a bunch of cigarettes, you know, every hour, right? It's bonkers. And I think one interesting part as well is that, you know, you recently quickly released a report on the payment sector. And I think we'll cover that in our future episode, but I'm just kind of curious, could you share some of the key highlights from that report?
Yeah, definitely. So this is a report that I did late last year. I think if you're just thinking as a whole about fintech, there's a couple of categories that are interesting for consumer fintech: banking, lending, trading, crypto, and insurance is kind of like the broad categories. The way I think about fintech is like it comes in waves, right? The first wave typically when a technology market emerges is usually lending, right? This is usually the most underserved need, just kind of like access to financial infrastructure and markets. Typically consumers in a developed market are underbanked and lack access. So this is important. So lending and second is payments, remittance, foreign exchanges, right? I think Southeast Asia is still very much in this wave, as is Thailand. And then from there, you have like insurance and then more like fundamental infrastructure, like open banking. But so the report focused specifically on payments in Thailand. I think lending as a category is still not solved, but it's very difficult for an early stage investor to invest in that category. But that's why I focus on payments as a category. High level, I think the biggest, some of the biggest takeaways is that Thailand has actually very strong adoption of online payments. We're ranked fourth globally by transaction value of real-time payments, right?
Wow.
So it's like how much, whatever you're transacting on real-time payments annually. The only countries ahead of us are India, China, and South Korea, right? And then Thailand is up there with real-time payments, which is quite impressive, you know, considering some of the earlier stuff we talked about. There have been a couple winners in this space, right? There's OPN, kind of like a Japanese Thai company. There's 2C2P. Those have kind of been the big winners within that. But outside of that, I think the big winners have been the Thai banks. A lot of the biggest banks, KBank, SCB, they've leaned very heavily into a technology strategy and they've invested in kind of undergoing digital transformation. So a lot of the value here has accumulated towards these banks and they're great businesses. So I think those are some of the main takeaways. And then the last thing was that the Bank of Thailand is planning to issue a virtual banking license, which basically allows banks to open without requiring a physical presence. So net new banks can be started up and open without needing physical branches. I think this is huge for the industry and it's an interesting space. But the big caveat there is very high minimum capital requirements. I think it's 5 billion Thai baht, which is, you know, just very big hurdle for startups and again, would benefit more the incumbents. So those were some of the high level takeaways from the report. But I mean, it's a space that I'm spending a lot of time thinking about, which I think continues to be interesting.
Amazing. On that note, thank you so much. I think the three big takeaways from this conversation is that, first of all, we talk very much about the Thai new government in terms of their pro-business reform agenda to build out popular legitimacy, but also stimulate economy. So we talked about cannabis, we talked about tourism, we talked about gaming. And then the second part, of course, is we double-clicked into a lot that walked into the various electoral possibility and the actual economic implications of each of those things, the cannabis ban, the LGBTQ legalization, the gaming legalization, the tourism push. There's a lot of different aspects about it. And lastly, thanks so much for, I think, covering actually a lot about the fintech angle in Thailand. So we covered the parachuting 10,000 baht to every person with either through the existing digital wallets, which is also part of real-time payments, or also the blockchain approach. But also I think that, and we will link to your report by yourself and Revenry about the real-time payment sector in Thailand. On that note, peace out and see you next time.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Jeremy. It was fun.
Thank you for listening to Brave. If you enjoyed this episode, please share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. We would also appreciate you leaving a rating or review. Head over to www.bravesea.com for member content, resources, and community. Stay well and stay brave.